This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean Podcast. In this talk, Reggie explains how, in more conservative Buddhist cultures, individuality is often viewed as threatening to established rules and conventions. However, for modern practitioners, these attitudes feel stifling. He says that sharing personal experience actually helps us unlock the spiritual journey. This talk was given at the 2006 Meditating with the Body retreat held in Crestone, Colorado.
So I thought before we come to an end, at least on this phase of our work together, that I should talk a little bit more about the nature of the journey. And the reason for doing this is that in conservative situations, conservative means backward-looking, situations that are trying to preserve the past in a strong way, which includes not only cultural and religious situations, but even, for example, in families, where there's a status quo and there's a high investment in preserving the status quo in families, what we call these dysfunctional families. You don't speak. You don't tell the truth. Language is used as a way of avoiding what's going on. And it is quite interesting that in the traditional cultural situations that we know about, and particularly the Buddhist, traditional Buddhist cultures, you actually don't talk about your experience. And I'll just speak about the Tibetan situation. It's regarded as quite a number of Western writers, Harvey Aronson, John Millwood, the guy who wrote Wisdom of Imperfection. You know, these are all Tibetan Buddhist practitioners, and they have had various kinds of contact with the culture, including, you know, living in Tibetan cultural regions. And one of the things that they found quite striking was that they tried to discuss their experience with Tibetans and to, you know, Tibetan teachers and practitioners. And they tried to get the teachers to talk about their experience, you know, the way we do, sharing our experience. And basically, it was regarded as inappropriate to talk about one's experience, and in fact a big ego trip, because what you're doing, I mean, this is the traditional viewpoint, when you speak of your experience, you are giving too much weight to your individuality, and individuality is considered ego. I'm not criticizing it at all, but what I'm saying is that we live in a very different situation now. And many people have, Western practitioners have been dismayed. John Wellwood tells a story that I believe I've already told you, but I'll mention it once more, which is he's a therapist, and he would frequently run into people who were Tibetan practitioners, you know, modern people, and in his case mostly Westerners, who were practicing Tibetan Buddhism and had things coming up in their life that actually were very, very powerful. And he mentions the case of a woman who had been actually quite abused by her husband. And she'd always been told, well, just be nice to him. Just practice compassion. It's not appropriate for you to express anger or any kind of feeling of resentment or, you know, any negative feelings. It's not appropriate. And they were not really open, actually, to her talking about it. which is very much a traditional viewpoint, at least in Tibet. You know, you basically don't talk about what you're going through. And John Wellwood's comment was that actually, for her to make the journey, she had to realize how enraged she was toward what her husband had done. And of course, it went back to her father. And that in order to come into possession of these feelings, she actually had to talk about it. She had to talk to John Wellwood and tell him how bad she felt. And in talking, the journey, I mean, there, you know, when you talk about something like that, you go through stages. And, you know, this book of his, Psychology of Awakening, is interesting because he actually talks about the way in which articulating, you start with a sort of discomfort, and then you realize what it is, and then you talk about it, and then it starts to unfold, and then your emotion starts to come out, and there's a whole unwinding process that occurs. And he said that was absolutely necessary for her to move forward, and simply telling her to just practice compassion and realize her husband's suffering like everybody else, I mean, that wasn't good enough. And the reason it wasn't good enough is because it did not unlock her own journey. Her journey was actually locked up, her personal journey. You know, we inherit this tradition, and on the Tibetan side of things, the journey is actually not really discussed. The stages of the journey, the things that we go through, you know, our experience, our unfolding experience is not really discussed. And I think the presumption is, which is, it's very interesting, that the culture is sufficiently together. I mean, I would say, a generous interpretation. I mean, we're being generous here. And I don't, you know, people would have to ask a lot more questions, do a lot more research to see if what I'm about to say is true. But the generous interpretation is that the culture itself was sufficiently together that people didn't need to talk about their experience particularly. Now, I have my doubts. Another part of this is that the modern situation really is different, as we've talked about already quite a bit, and that the kind of personal journey that is now a requirement for us in order to grow and become realized people was generally not necessary within the more traditional frameworks of Asian Buddhism. Now, I actually don't agree with that point of view. I mean, that is a generous interpretation. It's basically saying, listen, that was fine for them. We just have to do something different. But what I know, you know, from knowing Chogyam Trungpa is that, or what I think about this is, actually the traditional cultures in and of themselves, apart from Buddhism, were not actually able to accommodate the kind of open discussion of the journey that we do. They weren't able to accommodate it. And you know, really, because they were very conservative. Georges Bataille, a French postmodern writer, and he basically says, listen, you know, when you talk about your experience, you are honoring your individual insight, experience, and creativity when you talk about it. And what that does is it destabilizes all conservatisms. That's why, like in the Roman Catholic Church, you don't really talk about your experience. It has to be filtered through dogma. Because if you talk about it openly, it's going to destabilize the situation. And that's why American Catholicism is really, you know, kind of radical. And the Vatican, there's this all this tension between the American lay Catholic movement and the Vatican, because they do talk about their experience, and they just, you know, shit is shit, and they name it. I think one way of looking at this is that the very traditional cultures basically rely upon stereotypes, social roles, the reduction of individuals into social stereotypes, their stratified societies economically and socially, and talking about your personal experience, and I'm not talking about complaining. You know, I'm talking about experience as part of the journey is not, it's not welcome and it's not tolerated. And I know this from living in India, that within traditional Indian society, you know, young people told me, you know, we can't really talk about what we go through in the family because it would just destabilize the whole thing. But on the other hand, and this is the interesting point, there were people in the society who did talk about their experience in all of these societies, and they were actually the yogis and yoginis. But the thing, what they did is they actually had to leave the society to do it. And they would go into the jungles or they'd go up into the mountains and they would spend the rest of their life there because what they found out really could not be brought back into the society because it would actually throw the whole thing off. It's really quite interesting. It's a very, very fascinating situation. No one has written about this. Books on Tibet, it's not even mentioned, but it's the most interesting thing for me. Stephen Beyer, who's a Buddhologist, very brilliant guy, he's roughly my age, and he dropped out of Buddhist studies 30 years ago to become a lawyer because he felt actually that he could serve the Dharma better as a lawyer than he could actually as a scholar, which I actually happen to agree with. You know, once you get into the academic world, you're sort of buried in a highly political situation, and you spend most of your life dealing with the politics of the academic world. And he figured this out, and he realized he actually wanted to help the Dharma, so he became a lawyer. I don't know what happened to him subsequently, but this was his inspiration. But he's written several books on Tibetan Buddhism before he became a lawyer. And I remember one famous quotation, which I actually quoted in my book, Buddhist Saints in India. He said that within the Tibetan situation, you really had the feeling when you visited some of the monasteries that nobody had had an original thought in 400 years. But there were a lot of original thoughts happening up in the mountains. You get my point? In other words, it was happening, but it wasn't happening within the culture, and it didn't really affect the culture itself. And Tibetan Buddhism, even though Buddhism was there for 1,500 years, remained down into modern times one of the most brutal, repressive cultures, particularly for certain people in certain parts of the country that we know. You know, the Chinese actually really had a point. I mean, that's what was one of the problems, that when the Chinese came in and said, this is a medieval society, people are tortured, beaten, and killed simply for being different. I mean, the Chinese should talk, right? But on the other hand, they had a point. They actually had a point. You know, there was something to it. And so Chogyam Trungpa came out of the environment of these people who lived in the caves. And he came out being trained by people who were people who had actually made the journey and did talk about their experience. And his thing was, the Tibetan situation was too rigid. We couldn't really do it there. But that's where the Western world comes in, because in the Western world, we can do it. And in the Tibetan world, you couldn't bring your insight into the cultural environment because it was too rigid. And I would say it's not just Tibet, but many of the traditional Asian cultures were very much that way. I mean, we know that about the time of the Buddha. The Buddha was in a situation where he couldn't really tamper with the socioeconomic framework of India, and he accepted the caste system as a functioning reality and created separate societies, which were these monasteries. And, you know, you just couldn't take it on. You weren't in a situation where the culture was open enough to receive what you found out as a practitioner, not in a full way. So when we talk about the journey here in the West, we are doing something different than has ever happened before. And it's not because we're more egotistical. And, you know, honestly, I've been told that by some of the traditional teachers. Well, that's just because you people have bigger egos. And that's why you talk about your experience so much. And, you know, you really just, it's just narcissistic. Well, if I were on my own, I might go, oh, okay. But Chogyam Trungpa, you never heard anybody talk about experience as openly as he did, and encourage his students to do so also. And and it was very clear that within our framework, articulating our experience, and we're not talking about enlightened experience, we're talking about whatever we go through. And we're also not talking about discursive thought. We're not talking about thinking, 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 thinking. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about speaking from our heart in terms of what we actually go through in our life. And the deepest pain, the deepest neurosis, the deepest confusion, the deepest love, the deepest whatever it is. In other words, whatever's going on underneath the discursive momentum, articulating that experience was central to working with him, to the way he worked, the way he encouraged us. If you came in to see him and you did not talk about what was actually going on, he was not interested. If you came in and you told him what you thought about things or your some kind of obsessive thinking and just articulated your discursive thought, he was totally uninterested because there's nothing real there. But if you came in and you actually talked about what was really going on, he was so there. He was so there. He was you. He received it. And you could receive it because he received it. So, again, working with the body, we are invited into the intensity of what we go through in our life before we even think about it. And we are invited to talk about it. And that is an essential part of the journey, because in doing that, you are literally bringing to light the next step in your life. It's so important, talking about your experience. He always used to say, the student must present him or herself to me as a teacher without a mask, or I can't work with you. He didn't quite say, I can't work with you, but what he said was, you have to do it if we're going to have this relationship, because I'm not interested in some kind of phony, superficial, you know, discursive nonsense. I'm interested in who you really are, and you have to bring who you are to the table. Otherwise, what have I got to work with? So we are going to talk about the journey a lot in our work together and explore it, try to understand it. And in the process, we are giving voice to the new world that is constantly coming to birth. It's very powerful. It's very real. I think within traditional Buddhism, this was the unfinished business, what we're talking about here. You know, Buddhism is an unbelievable tradition, and there were always a few people that took it to the very end, and they knew. But the tradition as a whole, communities, this was the unfinished business, where we have to bring forth who we are and what we discover on the path into the light of day and into the light of our world. So just a few things. I mean, this is an unfolding process, what we're doing here. And, you know, I haven't talked about this really before with you in a systematic way. This is just a broad outline, and we will deepen this and explore it and share our experience, because we need to give birth to an understanding of the literal, visceral nature of the journey that we share. And this, it will encourage us and others to make the journey itself.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.